A friend of mine who grew up on Long Island claims that during the Nets' first season playing there, he attended a promotion called Ball Night, and he got a crummy plastic basketball that didn't bounce. That would have been in 1968. It was probably not the low point for the team that first played in the ABA and shuttled between various arenas in New Jersey and New York for four decades until finding a new home in Brooklyn in 2012. Brooklyn Bounce, subtitled The Highs and Lows of Nets Basketball's Historic First Season in the Borough, is Jake Appelman's new book, and he joins me from NPR's New York Bureau. Jake, welcome to Only a Game.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Brooklyn Bounce is about the 2012-2013 season, but you couldn't avoid chronicling the history of the Nets. They played in Teaneck, New Jersey in an armory. They played in Long Island's Nassau Coliseum, which was a lot more suitable for ice hockey than basketball. How many home arenas did the Nets have before they finally moved to Brooklyn?
If I remember correctly, it was 7 in 49 years.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, they're funny. We went to Nassau Coliseum for a preseason game, and I got to sort of walk around in the bowels of the arena and see how much that place was falling apart. And the Teaneck Armory is now this incredible soccer facility.
John Spoelstra was the president of the Nets from 1993 until 1995, and he described the team as follows. It was all convicts and criminals. One year we had six guys in jail. Not together, because that would have been teamwork. How far was he stretching things?
I think a little bit. And the Nets did have, with probably the exception of Drazen Petrovic during that time, a team that people saw as having a lot of knuckleheads. Chris Morris wrote, "Trade me" on his sneakers. Kenny Anderson wasn't frequently happy. And then Derek Coleman had the famous quote when they asked him about, Kenny was out at the strip clubs and they asked Derek if he was worried about it or whatever. He just said, "Whoop-dee-damn-doo." And if you ask any reporter covered the team back then, that's sort of the quote of legend.
You write that the Nets were always the second team, the light only occasionally breaking through the Knicks thundercloud. But as an ABA team, the Nets employed Julius Erving. They won a championship with him. And years later, as an NBA team, they got to the finals twice with Jason Kidd leading the way. So they weren't altogether a joke, right?
Not always. In talking to the Nets official scorekeeper, Herb Turetsky, who's been with the team since their first game, he really stressed the idea that when the ABA Nets with Dr. J went on the road, they were like the Rolling Stones, but when they were at home, they had trouble selling out.
Hmm.
And I mean, I had tickets to the first season with Jason Kidd when they made it to the finals, and it transitioned from corporate people all of a sudden wanting the tickets because they were very good from this place where there was really nobody there.
You suggest that the pinnacle of the Nets' first season in Brooklyn was a party that depended to some extent on the energy, the celebrity, and of course the music of then-minority owner Jay-Z. Now Jay-Z has moved on to various other concerns, including being a player agent. Has that hurt the Nets any?
I don't know. I mean, people were up in arms when the New York Times exposed how little of the Nets Jay-Z actually owned. But his influence was, there's been nothing like it in the music sports crossover.
Hmm.
I mean, the first season, they almost couldn't play two songs in a row without one of them being a Jay-Z song. He was so essential to forming their identity because it was sort of a marriage made in heaven with a stopwatch. Because Jay-Z is someone who always needs to go on to the next big thing.
Hmm.
He's affiliated with Kevin Durant as an agent, and Durant's a free agent in 2016 when the Nets may have a lot of money available. So if he lands them, you know, the second or first best player in the NBA at the time, then he will have done more than he could have ever done as an owner.
From 1968 to 1977, the team was known as the New York Nets. Did New York fans care about them, or were they always in the Knicks' shadow?
I think New York true basketball fans cared about them, with the exception of the few years where Reed and Frazier and DeBuscher and those guys had the Knicks on top of the NBA world. True diehard basketball fans looking for a distraction from 74 to 76 would look to Long Island and to those teams. But if it was about fan identity and being a part of this much, much larger cause, then they were in the Knicks' shadow.
The Nets started badly this season, and then they had a terrific January, and suddenly rookie head coach Jason Kidd, who had been the object of lots of criticism and some ridicule, finds himself NBA Coach of the Month. Given the wild ride of this season, do you kind of wish that you'd held off to write a book about the Nets' first 2 years in Brooklyn?
Well, I might have had to sleep in a cardboard box outside of the arena if that was going to be the case. The team itself was probably less quotable last year than it was this year. The benefit of doing a book this year would have been basically sticking a tape recorder in Kevin Garnett's face and having him write about 20% of it just by talking. He's one of the best quotes, most interesting guys in the league, which comes with his 18, 19 years of service. People say, oh, they had this Sodagate incident with Kidd where he had his former player Tyshawn Taylor spill soda on the floor,
right,
or bumping
on
him
purpose,
intentionally,
right.
So on purpose so that they would delay the game. And then there was the horrible start, and then there was the injury. And whether or not that makes for a better narrative, I don't know. I mean, I've had enough cynicism in New Jersey.
Finally, Jake, you've been close to the Nets for a period of time. How well do you think they will do over the rest of this current season?
I want to believe that they're going to do very well because they have this, it's not quite small ball. They throw a lot of guys who can interchange positions out there and confuse opposing coaches, and a lot of length on the floor, playing disruptive defense, setting team records for steals. I want to believe that that can carry them. I think it'll really depend on what kind of form they're in when the spring rolls around, assuming they can continue this and make the playoffs. For them to consider it a successful season, they would need to win at least one round. Almost nobody would expect them to win two because that would entail beating either the Heat or the Pacers, who are the prohibitive favorites. But I would like their chances in most first-round series if they can avoid those two Titans in the first round.
Jake Appelman is the author of Brooklyn Bounce, The Highs and Lows of Nets Basketball's Historic First Season in the Borough. Jake, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thanks so much for having me, Bill.
It's 22 and a half minutes before the hour.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. The Music Emporium, for 45 years offering collectible boutique and vintage acoustic guitars. TheMusicEmporium.com. And Eton, offering the American Red Cross radio line a portable solar-powered radio with cell phone charger and flashlight for emergencies or travel. Now at Radio Shack. This is NPR.
The hundreds of 300-plus pound linemen in the NFL wondering how they'll hold up after they retire might want to take note of Alan Faneca's post-football strategy. Faneca weighed 320 pounds when he was a 9-time All-Pro and Pro Bowl selection from 1998 through 2007. As an ex-player, he weighs 215 and finished the New Orleans Rock and Roll Marathon, his first, on Sunday. Faneca dropped over 100 pounds with a training program that includes cardio workouts 6 days a week and a seriously modified diet because, as he says, when you stop playing, you can't keep eating the things you were eating because you're not doing the things you were doing. The runners near him in the New Orleans Rock and Roll Marathon were relieved when that became apparent.
I just keep on eating because I feel that I am a failure if I do not finish everything in front of me.